What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Okay, we're going to talk to Buzz here in just a second. But first, you know, we often talk about the bonus content you get when you subscribe to our Patreon page at patreon.com/Bob Seska Show. What I don't typically mention as often is that subscribing has other benefits, too. For example, there's a chat room on the Patreon app where you can join our community and talk about anything you want. There's the comments section under each episode. You can send me direct messages about the show. And you can participate in our Ask Us Anything sessions on the After Party, which we'll be doing again this coming up Friday. So sign up and watch for my post where you can ask me and Kimberly questions about anything later this week. Sign up for just $1 a month at patreon.com/Bob Seska Show. And I totally look forward to your crazy, crazy questions. Thanks so much for supporting this podcast. And now let the cartoons begin.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
It appears Seska has been genetically altered.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, February 27, 2024, and this is the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi there, I'm Bob, genetically altered.
Hello, Bob.
Hi. Day 1,134 of the Biden-Harris administration, 252 days until the 24 presidential election. You can find me on Threads and Instagram. The Bob Seska is my handle on those places. We're going to talk about Meta here in a second. Plus, I'm on, what's the other one? Blue Sky, Bob Seska. Twitter, Bob Seska_go. Patreon, BobSeskaShow.com. And that guy sitting right there, it's Buzz Burbank with the news.
Yeah. You say Buzz Burbank.
Gotta hurry.
You've said it all.
Hi.
Yeah, we got to finish before AT&T crashes again.
Shit. Welcome. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Good day. Good day. He's Bob. I'm Buzz. And we are the psyops your dad's been screaming about.
Yep.
I love the way Biden called Putin a crazy SOB this week.
Yeah.
I'm like, now do Trump. Now do Trump. according to new documents, Biden's dog Commander bit Secret Service agents 24 times.
Wow.
Well, sure, that's how you weed out the Trumpers.
Awesome.
Proud Boys buddy and homophobic comedian Shane Gillis got to host Saturday Night Live after all.
Yeah.
Lorne Michaels decided to finally let Gillis host since, you know, Hitler's still dead.
I saw not, some of that. Not good.
Not available. A new study finds a connection between taking Viagra and a healthier brain.
Yay.
Aha. So the blood rushes to two places.
An erect brain, right?
Science marches on. And for the first time in 51 years, an American spacecraft has landed on the moon.
All right.
It was launched by a private company out of Houston. Ernie's Tire and Auto Glass.
I have no idea.
And, well, unfortunately, just as the probe was about to start its work, it collapsed like a Republican impeachment witness.
More music, the Bob Seska Show.
All right. Here we go. It's Rocky Mountain Mike kicking off a brand new week.
Would you like to hide that Trump in a padded room? Could we just decide to lock him away real soon?
He could gloat and tweet and brag about inaugural signs.
Tell him goodbye.
No.
Lock him away, that despicable, impeachable baboon.
sign a room.
No!
We're all sick of his face, that deplorable buffoon.
We can get along and right the wrongs made by this guy.
That'd be nice.
Tell him
he can fly.
Mary in Ann Arbor and Rocky Mountain Mike. That is a go-to song parody for me because if I ever need to feel happy, if I ever need to put a smile on my face,
I
play that one. Yeah.
Yeah. I love replacing balloon with baboon. I'm very fond of that. That choice, that artistic choice that Rocky Mountain Mike made. And
yes.
You can find more on his YouTube channel. Rocky Mountain Mike and I were conversing by email this week.
Fun.
Regularly over something I can't talk to you about.
Oh, no.
But we were bonding. And so that was a lot of fun to have that sort of secret conversation.
Oh, that's great. And you know what? Now what we need is a 12-inch remixed single of Lock Him Away. Because I would listen to that on endless loop. I love it so much. I love the song parody more than the actual song. That's why I play it so often.
We need the dance club version. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, more like this, please, Mr. President. I don't know if you saw Joe Biden on with Seth Meyers last night.
Little bits of it.
Yeah. Holy shit. This is exactly, Jody Hamilton was saying this on Stephanie's show this morning. This is exactly what Joe Biden needs to be doing more of. Because he was so relaxed and so comfortable and funny. Yes. And
well, that's him.
Yeah. I mean, at one point, Seth Meyers asked about Gaza. And once again, Joe Biden went off on a very detailed, thoughtful response as far as what's happening there in terms of a ceasefire, in terms of getting the hostages back. And so
talking like a normal person, sharp as a tack.
Yeah. Being president, doing president things. Presidential is a word that I think we've lost sight of because of Donald Trump. But this is how the evening started out. This is when the president was introduced. Amy Poehler was there. And this is how it all went down. Wonderful. This is Seth Meyers bringing up the Dark Brandon meme and then asking the president about Taylor Swift. And both responses were chef's kiss. Here we go.
But there's something that I've been very... It just speaks to the era we live in now. There's a Dark Brandon conspiracy meme. And this is something that you seem to have fun with. You've co-opted.
You're showing the yard
You've
sign.
You've co-opted Dark Brandon. This is a yard sign. Yep. And do you enjoy playing around with the Dark Brandon meme?
No, I resent the hell out of it.
Okay. All right, then he put on the glasses. He put on the aviator shades.
Of course.
Yeah,
of course.
I resent the hell out of it and puts the glasses on. Perfect.
Now, my favorite one recently is there are 18% of Americans, according to recent polling, have believe that you and Taylor Swift are actually working in cahoots. And after the Kansas City Chiefs won the Super Bowl, you posted this on social media and wrote, you wrote, just like we drew it up. Now, I have you on the hot spot here. Can you confirm or deny that there is an active conspiracy between you and Ms. Swift?
Where are you getting this information? It's classified.
Classified information? You won't share it with us?
I'm not gonna, but I will tell you, she did endorse me in 2020.
She did?
She did.
I bet you might be wondering. You think it might come around again?
I told you it's classified.
Oh, my.
Awesome.
See, I don't know if you remember, Bob, but last week you and I were talking about this very thing. And meaning, do we put Joe Biden out there more or do we keep him away so he can't make public gaffes? This is what I want to see.
Yeah.
This is the Joe Biden relaxed, confident, regular guy, sharp as a tack.
Yep.
I think we should have this on TV every day between now and the election.
Yeah.
Because this, more than anything else, belies the Biden age lie.
Exactly right. Yes. I think this even more so than that one paragraph in Ezra Klein's New York Times op-ed that we were talking about last week.
Paragraph out of a gazillion.
Yeah. In fact, I was having a conversation on Twitter with Jeff Charlotte, who's been on the show. He was the author who went around around and kind of infiltrated a lot of these mega churches and so forth, and then wrote about it.
Did he establish a web?
Right, Charlotte's Web, is that what you're saying?
Web, yeah.
Yeah. But no, he did not create a web. He does not have a pig friend. But the thing is, we were talking about this, and he was like, well, how do we convince people that Joe Biden's okay, and he's doing great, and he's doing fine? And I said, well, that's why I put the Ezra Klein paragraph out there. But you know what? This appearance on Seth Meyers, I think, as you were saying, really is the tip of the spear, so to speak. I think that's what needs to happen.
There's nothing better we can do. That is absolutely the best thing we can do.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's good news because it is effective. You heard the audience reaction. You know what our reactions are to it.
Yeah.
I want to see more of this. I disagree. I think the more we see of Joe, the better off we are. And if he makes gaffes, which he probably will from time to time, if we see him more, those gaffes will be a smaller percentage of the Biden that we see. Let's see the whole iceberg of Biden, and then the little gaffes won't seem so bad.
I think part of the problem, Buzz, and this is me just speculating, is that I think a lot of people perceive the White House as keeping Joe Biden on a short leash, guiding where he can go and where he can't go.
Seems like it.
Yeah, but I think appearing on more of these TV shows, appearing on video on TikTok, for example, as well, I think these are all things that contradict that idea and that will give people a little bit more confidence in his ability to be able to go another 4 years in office. So
this age thing interlocks with another issue. I loved your tweet about Lawrence O'Donnell's A block. Late last week.
Mm-hmm.
Was it the Friday show, the Thursday show that he did that on? I don't know if you've had a chance.
I think it was something like it was either the Tuesday night show or the Wednesday night show.
Oh, was it that early in the week? Man, time gets away from me.
It really does.
You understand why I'm running a little behind. But that's so important. I want to continue to dwell on that because we're still getting folks saying Biden is too old and he needs to be replaced on the ticket.
Yeah.
We've got now even Bob Costas, I guess, has been going from show to show. You've got Jon Stewart. You've got Ezra Klein to a large degree. You've got various guys out there saying
David Axelrod.
That Biden needs to step aside, that he needs to be, I think in Costas's words, shown the door. Well, nobody has done a better job of explaining why that's a bad idea than Lawrence O'Donnell's devastating segment last week. And I haven't gotten a chance to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And I've been sitting on it and I've been thinking about you retweeting that A block, which I did watch in its entirety. And you know that as a former writer and producer for The West Wing, Lawrence O'Donnell crafted that segment. Mm-hmm. He spoke for 27 minutes in that A block about why we can't replace Joe Biden on the ticket, because there are no other candidates who on the Democratic side who poll as well. And even if there were, they have no money.
Yeah.
They have $0 and 0 cents to spend on a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
These are there's no counter argument to that. Joe Biden shall be and should be the Democratic candidate for president. And nobody did a better job of refuting the idea of Biden stepping aside than Lawrence did in his show business experience.
Mm-hmm.
Lawrence O'Donnell went that 27 minutes and ended with a powerful line about, you know, did somebody film that? And then and then it cut to black. And it held black for like 3-4 seconds.
Wow.
Beat, and then put up his social media address. And then we went to the commercial break. That quick cut to black with no graphics, no tease, nothing, just a quick cut to black and hold in the darkness at the end of that powerful delivery.
Yep.
That is such an important piece. And we must play that piece for the likes of Jon Stewart and Bob Costas and the other folks who are going around saying that Biden is too old and that the Democrats should have another candidate. I know you've probably talked about that over the past week as time got away from me, but it's something that we must continue to say. I'm for mentioning it on every show between now and the election.
It should have put this issue to rest. That 28 minutes from Lawrence O'Donnell's show last week should have ended this conversation. Because if you're one of these people who, by the way, I understand the fear. I suffered the same fear. I did it a little bit privately last time around in 2019 into early 2020. I was like, oh, shit, it's Joe Biden. And I'm going into it with, you know, 30 years of following Joe Biden's career ahead of me, and this is, or behind me, and going into that election, going into the 2020 election, I was superimposing that on Joe Biden of that election, not realizing the myriad upsides in terms of nominating Joe Biden. But I was I was afraid that Joe Biden was the wrong guy to take on Donald Trump at that point, and I was very, very wrong, underestimated him.
I think you were right at the time.
Yeah.
If questions were going to be raised about Biden's age or ability, that was the time to raise them. Not now.
That's true.
Now it's too late.
Right.
Now, I mean, there are so many downsides to abandoning Joe Biden at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It guarantees a Trump win. It absolutely guarantees Trump win.
Yeah.
But this is a conversation, this age conversation, is something that should have occurred 3-4 years ago, not today. Today, we all need to be unified and headed in the same direction. And this talk, and I would like to think that Lawrence O'Donnell's A Block last week put an end to it also, but it hasn't, because guys are still going on shows saying he's too old and he needs to step aside. And as long as that continues, not everybody has heard what Lawrence has to say. So we're going to sit them down and Clockwork Orange style, pry their eyes open with wires and make them watch Lawrence's A Block until that message finally gets through. We cannot pound that. We must not assume that that message got through. We must continue to pound that message, and that's what I came here today with the intention of doing.
Yeah, you know what? He's 81 and he knows things. That's got to be the argument now.
Because, I love that. I want that t-shirt.
Right. Because not only does it own his age, but it also puts his age into context as far as what his age is bringing to the table as far as his ability to do the job.
I love that. Right? I love that. He's 81 and he knows things. My God, I love that. That's fantastic.
it's wonderful. Pulled directly from Game of Thrones, of course. I drink and I know things. Tyrion Lannister.
Yes. But I love it. And help us spread that, because that's just the best.
Yeah.
But also help us spread that no other potential Democratic candidate polls. I don't care how you feel about polls. It's all we've got. None of them polls even close to Donald Trump other than Joe Biden. Joe Biden is our best shot at beating him, and especially this late in the game. You want to start a new presidential campaign in March?
Mm-hmm.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Also, none of these potential candidates have any money.
Mm-hmm.
They have no political war chest to run on. Plus, there are all kinds of legal and complicated machinations that have to be jumped through in order to replace Biden on the ticket. And fourth and final, and I know Bob has talked about this before, and that is a brokered convention. Most people, I don't know if they know what that means. What it means is a very splintered convention where we might have 20 different Democratic candidates all fighting for a piece of the pie. And how do you think our 20 Democrats are going to do against one Donald Trump?
Yeah.
They're not. And if one of them wins, then we have 1/20th of the strength we had before. It is insanity to talk about replacing Joe Biden on the ticket. And that talk must stop now. And that talk about his age must stop now. And it's our job, you and me, Bob, and the jobs of those of you listening, to get out and stomp that down.
Yeah. I mean, take the polls and set them aside for a second and look at the way that Joe Biden is dominating on fundraising. Look at the way Joe Biden is dominating at the ballot box. We're going to talk about South Carolina here in a second.
Oh, yes.
Now imagine going into a brokered convention where suddenly the party, for no particular reason other than panic, goes, okay, we're going to replace Joe Biden. And instead of, you know, all those votes and all the volunteerism and all the donations to Joe Biden, we're going to throw all of that out. All of that hard work of the previous however many years that Joe Biden and the campaign have been running their reelection campaign, and all of the effort people have put into that, imagine that being thrown out, and imagine the reaction by those people. Suddenly, all of that money, where does that go? All of that volunteerism, where does that go? Suddenly, people do like the supporters of Eugene McCarthy did in 1968 and say, hey, you know what? If you're going to come in at the last minute, Hubert Humphrey, and take all these delegates at the convention rather than running for those delegates in primaries, we're going to stay home in November. And so, therefore, as fast forward to November, Richard Nixon ends up winning. And so that's what you don't want to create. Yes, I understand the panic. I understand the fear. He's old. He's 81. But we have to embrace this and own it and deliver a message and a framing for that age that is actually borne out in reality, where, yes, he's doing the job. There are reports coming from the White House that he's doing a fine job making the decisions that he needs to make.
Even Kevin McCarthy, having met with Biden, found him to be sharp and on the ball. These are all lies. This is just, we've talked about the various reasons for it before, but it's about winning the election for Trump. Yeah, really. Yeah. I get so angry when I see a headline in the morning newsletter from the Washington Post. The headline is, "Criticizing a president is always okay, even when running against Trump." Opinion by Perry Bacon Jr. God, that's in the fucking Washington Post. I'm so tired of that. That's what. So, no, Lawrence's A-Block has not gotten through, and so it's up to you and me, Bob, and all of us listening to the show today to make sure that that gets out and that those messages get out.
One of the things we've talked about since Blogosphere 1.0 buzz, this is going back 20 years, is the fact that the political press likes to use the same script over and over again during certain times in the political news cycle, right?
Script 1A, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and one of the things I did over the weekend is I went back to the archives to the 2012 election when Barack Obama was running for re-election, just like Joe Biden is doing now. Are there parallels between how the press handled Barack Obama's run for re-election with how Joe Biden handles his run for re-election? And I found, of course, what I recall from that period of time from 2012, which was a lot of concern trolling, a lot of rending of garments over the fact that Barack Obama used a teleprompter quite often, like all presidents do. Going back to Ronald Reagan, going back to the invention of the teleprompter, all presidents have relied on teleprompters to deliver prepared remarks. That's how it always worked. And yet the press had to shoehorn Barack Obama's use of the teleprompter into, well, I guess he can't talk. I guess he's unable to communicate. I mean, that was the thing. Barack Obama is how many decades younger than Joe Biden? And yet it was still Barack Obama doesn't know how to talk without his teleprompter. I mean, there was a headline. Let's see. It's going to run through some of the headlines here. Politico, Obama's safety net, the teleprompter. New York Times, Obama sticks to the script, all about how he uses a teleprompter. Obama teleprompter controversy rises from the dead to haunt the 2012 election. And there were many more Obama teleprompter headlines from the traditional political press, not just from Fox News and their copycats on the radio. This was the mainstream press. Politico, concern trolling about Obama's teleprompter. And then you fast forward and you see the script being applied to Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is dying. Hillary Clinton's emails. There's always something that gets amplified about the Democratic candidate that rises to the same level of reporting. I've talked about this for years now, where that one thing rises to the same level of reporting as the myriad, dozens and dozens and dozens of other Republican things. Right. They use that one thing to say, hey, well, look, we're also criticizing the Democrats here, too. See this? All the articles about teleprompters and note-taking. And I think once we recognize that the political press uses this and recycles this idea every time there's another national election, I think we begin to put that into the proper context, which is just the news media trying to fill space, trying to fill time on cable, et cetera.
And create controversy even when it isn't there.
Yeah.
There seems to be, between Meet the Press and the stuff that's pissing me off in the New York Times and the Washington Post, lately it's especially been the Washington Post, and Post columnist on the Biden's dogs biting Secret Service agents.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The article ends with, at some point you have to blame the owners.
Right.
It's a hit piece that has nothing to do with the issues facing Americans.
Nope.
It's a hit. It's only purpose. The only purpose of that column was to make the Bidens look bad.
Yep.
And that is the work of the Washington Post, the same paper who thought it was okay to criticize Biden while we're trying to save democracy.
And so this, I think, is a pretty good segue over to the South Carolina primary, which... no surprises as far as the, you know, the headline results of the South Carolina primary. Donald Trump won the South Carolina primary, and Joe Biden obviously won the South Carolina primary. Here's how Kristen Welker, our favorite host of Meet the Press.
There we go.
And I say favorite sarcastically.
Very sarcastically, yes.
Here's how she reported Donald Trump's victory. This was Sunday morning after what I guess the South Carolina primary was Saturday. Yeah.
Yes.
This is how this went down.
Trump delivering a crushing blow to Haley in her home state on Saturday, trouncing her by nearly 20 points
with
nearly 60% of the vote. The former president dominated every key group in the South Carolina Republican primary
electorate. Listen to her emphasize those words. Listen, I'm sorry to interrupt, but listen to her emphasizing those words. That's part of the, that's not news reporting.
Yeah.
That's cheerleading.
Let's start
from
this.
Can you play that again? And listen to her say the word dominating and tell me, is that a journalist or a cheerleader?
It's like she's reporting on Godzilla crushing Tokyo. It's like Godzilla dominated Tokyo by crushing buildings. And
she's cheering for Trump instead of reporting the facts.
Right. Play it again. Here we go.
Trump delivering a crushing blow to Haley in her home state on Saturday, trouncing her by nearly 20 points with nearly 60% of the vote. The former president dominating nearly every key group in the South Carolina Republican primary electorate, according to NBC News exit poll results. Trump now setting his sights squarely on the general election.
That's your liberal media, ladies and gentlemen. This is what the Republicans have been screaming about for years. Oh, my God, the liberal media. When are they going to get their boots off our necks? The liberal media. Okay, so that was your liberal NBC News program, Meet the Press.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I put liberal, obviously, in dick quotes. I'm being, once again, sarcastic, just to be clear.
And put them over in the corner with the Washington Post and Bill Maher. Yes.
The shocking thing about this, okay, we've heard the liberal media.
Right.
Let's listen to the Fox News reporting of the South Carolina primary results. And this for this, not just one clip, I've got two clips.
They must be really cheerleading over there, Bob.
Yes. Oh, my God. You better believe it. Donald Trump dominating and crushing the opposition in the home state of Nikki Haley.
What superlatives will they use?
Yes. Here's John Roberts.
The real key here is this 59% of Haley voters who say that they would not vote for Donald Trump should he become the nominee. That tracks with about 24% of the Republican Party, which is right along the lines of what that New York Times Siena poll showed us almost a year ago now, in terms of the makeup of the Republican Party, in which there was about 25% of Republicans who say that they are never Trumpers.
Oh, God, there it is. Fox News putting a fine point on the reality of this presidential election. And again, it's Fox News we're talking about here.
Right, right. More honest in this case, in this one moment in time.
Right.
More honest than NBC. I want to address some of this, but I want to hear the rest of these tapes.
Okay.
Fox. Surely they're going to top Kristen Welker in superlatives.
Yes, exactly. And here we go. This is Mark Thiessen, of all people.
Oh,
on Fox News Channel, talking about the results of the South Carolina election. Here we go.
Party. So if you think about this, this is a unique election in the sense that we have basically two incumbents. You have Joe Biden, who's running for a second term, and Donald Trump, who's running for a second term, right? And so...
Okay, you know what? I want to stop and emphasize this once again.
Uh-huh.
Donald Trump is just as much of an incumbent as Joe Biden is.
Right.
So therefore, the fact that Donald Trump is not... unlike what Kristen Welker said, he is not dominating these primary elections against his challengers. Joe Biden, on the other hand, absolutely is. So let's listen to Mark Thiessen say that exact thing.
Yes. Party. So if you think about this, this is a unique election in the sense that we have basically two incumbents. You have Joe Biden, who's running for a second term, and Donald Trump, who's running for a second term, mm-hmm. right? And so how did Joe Biden do in South Carolina? 96.2% of the vote. Donald Trump got 60%, and 4 in 10 voters in the Republican Party said no. Even right. though they know that the race is pretty much over, that he's going to be the nominee, they still voted against him.
Wow.
That is a problem, because when he says this is the most united Republican Party he's ever seen, it is not the most united Republican Party. And 59% of those Haley voters say they're not voting for him.
That's a huge deal. 60% of that, whatever it was, 36, 39% that Nikki Haley got, said, right. no way, we're not voting for Donald Trump in the general election. That is a huge chunk. What have I said for so many years about the condition of our elections right now? They invariably come down to 1 or 2 percentage points here or there, maybe in a precinct, maybe in a swing state, where that decides the election. Those couple of percentage points, maybe even a fraction of a percentage point. And what we're talking about here is in South Carolina, blood red South Carolina. These Nikki Haley voters are like, no way I'm ever voting for Donald Trump. Some of them were interviewed during exit polls where they said, you know what, Project 2025, I've read all about it. It scares the hell out of me. Donald Trump should not be president because of Project 2025. There are evangelical voters in Michigan, according to John Kasich, former governor of Ohio, John Kasich, who said, those evangelical voters in Michigan are backing away from Donald Trump. They've had enough. They're fed up with Donald Trump. So as far as I'm concerned, and this also loops in this age issue as well. I think the age issue, something I said to Jeff Charlotte in our conversation yesterday, the age issue is going to cancel itself out. I firmly believe that. People who are...
I think it'll be forgotten. I think a lot of things will be forgotten as we get closer to the election.
Yeah, I think you're going to see quite a few Republican voters either voting for a third party candidate or staying home, because they're done with Donald Trump. Donald Trump cannot pick up enough support. I don't care what the janky polls are saying right now. Every other indicator, every other election, whether it's a special election, whether it's you talk about fundraising, all these different indicators in terms of, and I'm talking about non-poll indicators, are showing that Joe Biden could end up doing quite well in his re-election election night. So I think that is something that I believe should fuel our volunteerism, fuel our activism, because the only way Donald Trump wins this is if we get complacent. I mean, that's...
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we cannot, obviously, we said that before, can't make any assumptions or get complacent. Yeah. But I think we can move forward with some confidence. I think you can take a breath. Yeah. I think things, although as scary as things are, I'd like to tell you, you've got this. And here's why, just to recap, 40% voted for in that primary Saturday in South Carolina. 40% voted for Haley, not for Trump. Mm-hmm. 60% of those voters say they would not support Trump. Nationally, 24% of Republicans won't support Trump. And here's the thing about all those numbers and all those facts, all these things that clearly spell out that the Trump campaign is in trouble. You won't hear that reported. You're not hearing reported, except there briefly on Fox News.
Yeah.
You're not hearing reported that the Trump campaign is in trouble. This is why we as progressives can breathe a little easier. We can't let down our guard. The stakes are high, and it could still be a close race, so we can't afford to take any chances. But we can breathe just a little bit easier knowing that guy's got major problems, and that doesn't even bring in the criminality.
Yeah.
What you will hear reported and what you have been hearing reported in the mainstream media is that the Biden campaign is in trouble because of his age and because of other BS issues, and because, to a large extent, of Palestine. Michigan, for example, which is key to Biden's reelection, he really, really needs to win Michigan, although Nebraska remains an ace in the hole, but we can talk about that another time. Michigan is really key to Biden's reelection and has a very large population of Palestinians, and they are not happy with the assistance that Biden has given to the Israelis in this. And we're not going to get into, we each have our own opinions about this, for sure, and that's not what this is about. What this is about is about the mainstream media reporting on how this is going to hurt Joe Biden. And, you've been seeing this is going to hurt Joe Biden reporting for a year now, at least. This is another example of that. So what you're hearing and seeing in the media is the Biden campaign is in trouble because of age, because of the Palestinians in Michigan, because of this, because of that. What you're not hearing are these numbers that prove that the Trump campaign is in real trouble.
Yes, yes. And I think sometimes the press looks at the Trump confidence and they take it too seriously. Like they're seeing, yeah, they oh my God, well, the Trump supporters are like all in. They think, oh, he's going to just kind of sleepwalk to victory in November.
They mistake loudness for winning. They mistake enthusiasm, no matter how insane or unhinged, they mistake that enthusiasm for winning. Yeah. That's not winning. I'm familiar with people who thought louder was how you win an argument. Well, and where I come from, it doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. I really think that the press perception of Joe Biden is based almost exclusively on this age-old reliance on polling. And, you know, I don't want to get into a whole thing about polling again. Everyone knows how I feel about it at this point. But the fact of the matter is that the press is still looking at that as its chief indicator for how Joe Biden's going to do. And I don't think it's at all reliable anymore.
Oh, I think they look more. I think they look more to each other. Like, what are the other guys saying? What are the other guys doing? And we did. So I think there's a lot of that too.
And that I think is what we see with a lot of press questioning. We saw that during Joe Biden's press conference after the Robert Hur report.
That was so embarrassing.
Where he actually called them out. He said, "No, this isn't what people are thinking. This is what you're thinking, and you're just disguising it as what American voters are thinking."
I have never been so embarrassed. I'm reluctant. Those people are not journalists.
No.
I would like to think I'm more of a journalist than they are, and that's stretching things somewhat. but I'm more of a journalist than they are.
Yeah, well, that's not surprising at all. You're a fine journalist, and you always have been. I mean, the utmost in integrity. And I know that you wouldn't deliberately skew something based on your own personal feelings versus what is actually true. God, that was a couple of weeks ago now, but still, it's one of those things that we got to remind ourselves of to make sure to keep watchdogging these people. So, yeah, shame that Eric Bollert, our friend Eric Bollert, isn't around for this particular election because, man, boy, would he be ripping his hair out over what's been happening with the press. And we just saw a great example of that, the difference between what's happening on the liberal media versus what's happening on Fox News Channel. And this will be one of the only times you'll ever hear me praising Fox News Channel.
Yeah, but remember that what you caught off Fox there was a moment in time.
That's true.
That's not what they do the rest of the, you know, the other 23 hours and 59 minutes of the day.
Well, yeah, I think in terms of actual news reporting, that, I mean, John Roberts is a news anchor on Fox News. Mark Thiessen is... kind of a guest analyst.
Crazy,
well, they are right wing, no doubt about that. Yeah, but they're telling it like it is. I don't care what their politics are.
They're telling it like it is.
Yeah,
they quoted accurate numbers when the other so-called liberal media at NBC was not.
Right.
I mean, and between NBC News and Lorne Michaels over at Saturday Night Live, I you know, I'm sad about that network. I'm really sad that because that was. Once a great network, I thought.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I hope it's not the cynical cash grab, or I should say the cynical ratings grab. Because, well, I mean, that's what it could be. It could just be what everyone is saying, which is that I think the cable news networks and some of the publications need Donald Trump in order to stay afloat. And maybe that's a consideration here. You know what? I need to see that. I need to see some evidence of that. Otherwise, it's just speculation. And while that speculation may, in fact, be accurate, and obviously I'm leaning in that direction, I don't know for sure. But you know what? How awful would that be? I mean, really, if it's determined, if some memo comes out, gets leaked from NBC News that says, we need to take this position because we need the ratings. It's like, Phil Griffin, I think, said that about CNN. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was Les Moonves about CBS.
But CBS, yeah.
Yeah.
Donald Trump has been good for CBS.
Exactly. That was 2016, though. I mean, we're in a different paradigm now.
Yeah, but money is still money. Yeah. It's not only about the immediate cynical cash grab, but let me recap the two reasons, and call it speculation if you like, but prove me wrong. Wrong when I say there are two reasons the media is doing what it's doing. One is they hope to win back, if possible, win back some of the people on the right that they've lost. Mm-hmm. They're not going to succeed, but that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
The other thing they're trying to do is to spare themselves the wrath of the dictator when he takes power, and that's not going to work either. But the immediate cash grab of reporting a horse race, that's one. Two is the hope to re-improve revenue by bringing back red hats to the viewership. And three, they hope that they will be spared the wrath of the dictator. These are the very obvious motives of the mainstream media in doing what it's doing. Yeah. And like I said, the first one may work. They may, they are profiting, I believe, from the horse race reporting. What will not work for them are their long-term plans of being spared the wrath of the dictator and winning back the red hat viewers. Mm-hmm. Ain't gonna happen.
Yeah. I'm sure you saw Nate Silver recently talking about how, why do Democrats just want the press to report things that are favorable to Joe Biden? Why, oh, why? And I had to respond to him. And fortunately, it got a little bit of engagement, which I was happy to see. But I said, God damn it, that's not the thing. What we want is basic fairness and prioritization. What we want is the press to treat stories about Donald Trump with the importance that they possess. Like this thing that he says about wanting Russia to invade Europe, for example, should have received so much more attention from the traditional press, the front page of the New York Times and so forth. But it didn't. Why? What's the explanation? Well, I don't know. It was buried on page A16, for fuck's sake.
Yes.
Why was it buried that deep? Why was that not an important story, New York Times? All we're asking for is for basic fairness and maybe an explanation so that we're not left to sit here and go, well, what the hell is going on? Feeling gaslit. Like, well, this sounds like it's an important story, but why isn't it being treated like an important story?
And so, while you've been trolling them on social media, by the way, I've been responding to them directly at the newspaper sites.
Good for you.
I mean, in the comments section to the authors of these ridiculous articles, I've had a word or two for them lately.
I'm sure you have. Good for you. Because I think that's what it requires. I think media watchdogging right now, more than any other time in our history, is so important. I mean, we're talking about an industry that is explicitly protected in the First Amendment of the Constitution. What other industry in the United States is afforded that kind of protection?
Impunity, yeah.
Yeah, and that means something, though. That means that they have a standard to rise to.
To the author of the Biden's dog story, I wrote, and this, among other things, I mean, it was a paragraph, but I think I ended with, and this serves the public how?
Yep. Okay. You know what? I just realized we're super late for a break, but this is an important conversation that I was happy to push the break for. Notify the affiliates we're running late. Okay.
As usual.
Let's take a short break and come back and talk about Donald Trump's loyalty to Vladimir Putin on full display at a Trump rally over the weekend. Got a clip of that. Plus, Trump has appealed the civil fraud judgment, but there's an asterisk next to that statement. We'll talk about that, too. Whole lot more podcasts still to come right after these words.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
There is exciting news in Stephanie Miller podcast land, isn't there, Chris? We now offer Stephanie Miller's Happy Hour podcast and the Out of the Gate podcast.
Stephanie Miller's Happy Hour podcast is once a week. It is the best interviews of the week from the Stephanie Miller Show every Friday. Stephanie Miller Out of the Gate is daily. You will get the first segment of every day's Stephanie Miller Show, plus Stephanie Miller's Happy Hour Extra, which is the best interview of each day. So three different podcasts in one feed.
Get it wherever you get your podcasts.
Subscribe on your favorite podcast app.
Bob Seska!
All-time favorites all day long!
Lady Red, creeping in on his bed, top down as I'm saying.
Yeah, the metal Birds. That's Birds with a Y, in case you're searching on the internet for them. And by the way, I got a link in the description to download this single. It's called Shy Girl. Yeah, we played this before. Trying to repeat some of these songs so we get accustomed to them.
Like
giving them off, giving them a one-off playing and then never playing them again. We gotta keep repeating.
And that's Metal Birds.
Metal Birds.
Metal
yes.
Birds. That's the that's how the government spies on us.
That's right. Black the nickname for the black helicopters. Is that what you're talking about?
Oh no, there are people who believe. Oh my God, Bob. Where have you been? There are people who believe, I'm sorry, there are people who believe that birds are not birds. There are people who believe that those are like government robots sent to spy on us.
I know.
So I would assume that would be the case with metal birds, but they use a Y, so who knows?
Yeah, I forgot about the metal birds, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I didn't mean to derail that because I know we like to talk about the music.
Yeah, I know. By the way, the Metal Birds have a new single out right now called Working Class. I just heard about it today, so I couldn't get it together for today's show, but they've got a video up on YouTube, and go check it out. Again, it's called Working Class. Great video, black and white, moody video. Just excellent. One of our favorites here on the show. BobSeska.com/music to submit. Also, make sure to go to the link in the description to download this single and support the Metal Birds. Okay. So if we were asking the question, how loyal to Vladimir Putin is Donald Trump really?
Oh,
I think Donald Trump answered that question during a rally over the weekend where, yeah, he obviously short-circuited with this. He wasn't really paying attention to what he was saying. But it sounds like, man, he really likes Vladimir Putin to the point of endorsing Vladimir Putin's endorsement of Joe Biden. Apparently, recently, Vladimir Putin said he'd prefer Joe Biden to win this election. And in this clip, you'll hear Donald Trump talking about that and saying, yeah, I agree. I mean, he actually says, and I agree. Here we go.
Got along with him well, although he did announce the other day that he'd much rather see Biden as president. And I agree with him.
Hey.
I agree, because, you know, I...
Okay, right there. I agree with him. I agree with Vladimir Putin that Joe Biden should be president. How about them apples? So that just shows you how deep into Vladimir Putin's butt crack Donald Trump has driven his disgusting face. And so now we know. Obviously, that was a glitch. That was a fuck up. But yeah,
you know, it's funny. You know, Putin did say that, but he said that he preferred Biden to be elected because Biden was more predictable.
Yeah.
Well, what Putin is also saying there is that Trump is totally unpredictable, as in unhinged. I think in some ways, Putin was saying, you know, at least Biden is stable and predictable, whereas Trump is insane and unpredictable.
Yes, and I hate to go back to my forecast from the previous 4 years of Donald Trump. But my fear is that one morning we're going to wake up to a mushroom cloud somewhere in the world. And I hope I hope it doesn't happen. And if it does happen, I hope it's just one. But you know what? That is just an illustration of the kind of instability that Donald Trump will bring to an extremely volatile world, with Russia kind of in the middle of all of it, with the obvious invasion of Ukraine, and how that the United States support for Ukraine would vanish under Donald Trump, and then how that would empower Vladimir Putin then to move on to places like Poland and some of the former Soviet satellite nations, and Donald Trump's support of that. So what you're talking about here, Donald Trump likes to scream about World War III and something yada, 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 Joe Biden, World War III. It's Donald Trump, absolutely. It has the potential to start World War III. No doubt about it.
It breaks my heart to see us not helping Ukraine because of the Republic. We've already begun to cut off aid to Ukraine, and we're the party in power. How does this work? We've been whining about this for years.
Yeah.
Here again, we have a majority, a Democratic majority government, no matter how slim or narrow it may be, but we can allow the minority to block aid to an ally that's protecting us from Russia. There's something terribly wrong with the system when it allows that.
Yes, yes. And so this is one of those things where you need smart people in the White House. You need people who are stable, who are even keeled, who are rational, who will make rational decisions, who understand how statecraft actually works, who understand how foreign policy works. Yeah.
Who are more about facts than ideology.
Right, right. And look, if you get a chance, go onto Twitter or wherever and find a clip of Joe Biden talking about Gaza last night on Late Night with Seth Meyers. And you will hear someone who knows what the fuck it is they're talking about. Unlike Donald Trump. If Donald Trump was asked that same question, he would just be very, very powerful. We would be very powerful. This wouldn't have happened if I was in office. No solutions, no ideas. I assure you, Donald Trump cannot point to Gaza on a fucking world map.
Right, right. And by the way, this brings me back to the Palestinians of Minnesota and the old axiom that says vote in the primary with your heart and in the general with your head.
Yeah,
I have a feeling that as unhappy, brokenhearted, disillusioned as some Palestinian voters in Michigan and elsewhere may be, they may vote their hearts by voting uncommitted in today's Michigan primary. We may see a decent number of that or an indecent number of that, depending on your perspective. We may see a notable amount of voting non-committed today in Michigan because of the people who are upset about Biden's handling of Israel and Hamas at this point. And what I want to say about that I think is encouraging for all of us is this is the primary election in which we vote with our hearts. I believe firmly as the election draws closer, as the real general election draws closer, that those Palestinians will take another look at Donald Trump and the stances that he has taken do the right thing. And in the end, I believe that they will vote for Joe Biden. So what I want to say as a point of encouragement is I think that, and I see Joe Biden adjusting his policy as well. I do not be afraid is the message I'm trying to convey here. Yeah. Do not be afraid of what you're hearing about these sorts of things, because in the end, I think all Democrats will, and most independents and even some Republicans will come around and do the right thing on Election Day.
In terms of protesters who are protesting Joe Biden over Israel and Gaza,
right.
I don't believe that there's much of a factor there in terms of Joe Biden's actual results. I mean, he got, 97% of the vote in South Carolina. It's not like people are voting against Joe Biden. I mean, there may have been some people, some Democrats who stayed home.
Well, not there, probably.
But, but I mean, even still, if you look at Joe Biden's support in the primaries so far, it's been the kind of support that every incumbent president gets in their primary campaigns. And so, consequently, what you're seeing there is if there is an impact from the pro-Palestinian protests, it's maybe that they stayed home, not necessarily that they went out and voted against Joe Biden.
This comes up because Minnesota has a particularly high, large population of Palestinian Americans, more than other states, and I would dare say more than South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And Michigan is a key state for Biden to win.
Yeah.
That's why the concern about you and I come together at the general election when we say in the end it probably won't matter much, because when they look at Trump and they look at Biden, regardless of whether they're black or Palestinian or gay or whatever, I think people from across all spectrums in a majority will vote for Joe Biden. So I you know, the hand-wringing over the tenuousness of the Michigan vote is really about the Palestinians and their reaction to his policy.
Yeah.
So there's genuine concern there about a state that's very important, that may be a very close race and a tough win for us to get. So there's reason to be concerned about that. What I'm saying is I don't think we're going to have this problem in November. I think it's a problem now. I understand the hand-wringing now about it. And all I, the only reason I brought it up is to say, in the long term, you're going to be hearing about this. In the long term, don't worry about it.
Yeah, I think there are many more people who are disgusted with Donald Trump on the Republican side and will stay home because of it than there are
ultimately
Democratic versions of that same thing with Joe
Biden.
Yeah,
whether it's inflation or Israel policy or whatever it is that people are whining about Joe Biden, when it gets to be Election Day, as I think we've said semi-consistently over the last year and a half, is that when it comes to Election Day and it gets down to that choice, and look, it turned out to be that choice after all, Trump and Biden.
Yep.
When it gets down to that choice, hey, the choice is going to be obvious. Again, regardless of who you are, what your background is. And so I understand the factions and the hand-wringing that we're seeing now. Let's get a little farther into the season. I'm here to try to assure people that it's not a thing to be worried about long term.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
that's the only, I didn't bring it up to say let's worry about it. I brought it up to say you're going to be hearing about it whether I bring it up or not, and I'm here to say don't worry about it.
Well, and the other thing that I think needs to be woven into this conversation, too, is all of the conflicts that Donald Trump faces because of this civil fraud judgment, because of the E. Jean Carroll money that he owes to her, and then all of the additional things that he's going to owe, because there are several lawsuits in D.C. regarding January 6th that Donald Trump will face. I mean, there are so many things here that could put Donald Trump in an extremely compromised position as president. So along those lines, Trump has appealed that civil fraud judgment in the Letitia James Judge Engoron case. But you know what? He hasn't put up the bond yet. And this is some new information that I wasn't aware of. Apparently, you can appeal without necessarily paying the amount you owe. And that's, I think, part of this. He hasn't yet paid the bond on this judgment. So I don't know when that happens, but I do know that the interest will continue to accrue at something like $12,000 a day.
So, I saw $114,000 a day.
Oh, yeah.
$114,000,
what did I say? 112,000 I saw.
I saw, and I saw a number in that neighborhood of $114,000 a day.
I'll take that one.
it's just amazing. I mean, this cost him money starting right now.
Yeah.
The clock is ticking. He's got to come up with a bond. Let's see. I'm pulling for an article here in the Times. In theory, Trump has two options. He can either write a check for more than $450 million to New York State, which would then hold the money in escrow, or he can secure an appeal bond from a specialized company licensed to provide them.
Yeah.
Well, unless he unless the Saudis come running up with wheelbarrows full of money, and I don't know if they will at this point, the bond is his only choice. Now, his net worth is mostly in real estate, not in cash. I'm skimming down the article here so we don't get too much. We know that the bond could creep up to a total of $500 million. to secure the, okay, here we go. The company providing the bond will be on the hook if Trump loses his appeal and fails to pay, so it will want the former president to have skin in the game. To secure the bond, Trump has to pledge collateral to the company, including cash, stocks, and bonds.
Yeah, yeah.
Although each deal is different, companies offering appeal bonds generally shy away from taking property as collateral, especially if a building already has a mortgage. I tell you who wants to take the property is Letitia James. She's already got her eye on, 40 Park Avenue. I can't remember the address.
40 now. Wall Street, something like that.
40 Wall Street. 40 Wall Street.
Yeah, he's got several properties there that I hope Letitia James seizes and then levels and then put something there for homeless people or maybe a COVID memorial for all the people Donald Trump killed through COVID through his incompetent response to the pandemic. But Katie Fang?
I don't know. I knew until you asked.
I'm going with Fang. Fang said it's just the notice that he's filed, not the appeal, not the actual appeal itself.
Right.
Can he post the bond is the biggest question. So there may be a separate step here in the appeal process where he does have to post the bond. in order to move forward.
Well, or he has to pay the interest each day until this is decided. So while he's mulling it over, it's costing him $114,000 a day. This is assuming he can even find a company willing to bond him. Yeah. And if he does, he has to pay them up to 3% of the bond.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this just the cost of this is just enormous. I don't care what he says or, you know, how many sneakers he sells or even, you know, how many donations he can round up through his lies. Mm. It won't be enough.
That's right.
This is more devastating to Trump than anyone is admitting.
Right. CNN reports here, the New York Attorney General's office said in a court filing last year that in 2021, Trump had about $200 million in cash, but it was tied up in a partnership with Vornado. You know what Vornado is? Those are the fans, the box fans.
Yeah, it's a little company in Kansas. They make the best fans.
Yes.
Not just box, all kinds of fans. And I have one by my bedside.
And the noise they make is, rear, rear, rear. That's the Donald Trump said about the wind farms.
Yes. Yeah.
It's ironic that Donald Trump, who desperately avoids wind because of his hair.
Tell me about this.
Cash wrapped up in a wind company.
I really loved Vornado. Now, what's happened? Tell me what?
I don't know. Yeah, his cash is tied up in a partnership with Vornado.
Oh, geez.
And I'm guessing. I did a Google search, and the only Vornado here is the fans. I don't know if there's some other firm.
It's a fan company in Kansas, and they built. You remember those Tonka trucks that were around?
Yeah, of course.
Before your time. Yeah. They're the toys for boys at the time, like dump trucks and stuff. Toys the size of a shoebox. That were virtually indestructible. Yeah. You could sledgehammer these things and they would still roll. The Tonka trucks were the strongest. Well, a Vornado fan is the fan equivalent of the Tonka truck. It's made of steel and iron and, you know, it's as solid as they get. And now it just breaks my heart and a well-run company. And now to hear that they've teamed up with Trump, is nothing sacred anymore?
Okay, so I saw Bloomberg headline says, Trump Vornado owned San Francisco buildings land on watch list. So I think it's like a cooperative.
A different company.
Investment.
Well, then in the words of Emily Latella, never mind.
Okay, well, here's another headline from Bloomberg. It says, Trump scores $617 million of cash with Vornado from tower bonds.
Yeah.
I mean, I would read the article, but it's Bloomberg, and you can't read the article unless you're...
Right, yeah. Right. And there's probably more than one Vornado company.
Oh, yes, you're right. Yeah, there is.
Vornado Realty Trust.
Yes, well, I just landed on it.
The fans are safe. We can keep the fans.
That's right.
Yeah, Vornado Realty Trust. I find it now, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I had a hunch that it was maybe not the fan company.
Yeah. I was nervous because I love, you have no idea how important a Vornado fan is to me.
Yeah.
And so I would have been just crushed if he had somehow raped that company.
Yeah. Yeah, they own a bunch of properties, New York Marriott Marquis, 1540 Broadway, Manufacturers Trust Company Building, 660 Fifth Avenue, 770 Broadway.
Don't scare me like that.
Well, my guess is, and I'm just, again, because I couldn't read the actual Bloomberg article because it's behind the paywall, my hunch is these are properties that Vornado, this real estate company, is building, and Donald Trump is partnering with them in terms of the branding of the building. Like he's going to put his name on the building or something like that.
Oh, well, America can breathe easier now that we know the truth.
But the point here is that all of his cash is tied up in this. So
yeah, he's screwed. He's more screwed than he will tell you, certainly. But more screwed than you're really seeing in most reports. I think everybody's just assuming that, well, he'll figure this out. The clock is already ticking. He has less than 4 weeks now. It's like 3.5 weeks. And in the meantime, it costs him $114,000 a day.
Yeah.
So the clock is ticking, and every day costs him that he doesn't find a bonding company that he pays 3% to and puts up his collateral for, and it can't be buildings. I mean, the guy is really screwed.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm so happy about that.
Right.
Meantime, at least one member of the RNC is trying to stop the party from paying Trump's legal bills. So whoever you are, please keep going. Says
good
here,
luck.
The effort to keep committee neutral on the primary and to not spend committee funds on Trump's legal bills comes after Trump called for the RNC's current leaders to be replaced and instead install one of his senior campaign advisors and his daughter-in-law in top roles. Right. And that's, we're talking about Lara Trump.
Lara. Who has said every penny that goes to the RNC will go to Trump.
Right.
And she didn't say how or in what form.
Yes. And every single Republican candidate for Congress, Senate, et cetera, state legislatures, governor's mansions, they're all screaming,
no!
They don't want this to happen because they need that money. And Trump, it looks so like Larry Trump's going to hoard it all for Donald, right?
Normally, the RNC would hand out some of this money to Republican congressional candidates. But Donald Trump is going to hoard all of it because that's how scared and desperate he is and will continue to become.
Okay, so I still want to talk about the IVF ban because this situation is fascinating.
It is.
A number of perspectives, obviously it's awful and hypocritical. And I want to talk about how the Republicans have painted themselves into a corner on this. Mm-hmm. Plus, I'm going to have a quiz for you. It's a Who Said This quiz, which is basically, I'm ripping that off from Stephanie Miller. She does that to Chris LaVoie all the time.
You know how I love a quiz.
Yeah. So I've got a quote for you when we come back from the break, and you're going to have to tell me who said it, who said the quote. Okay, IVF and a lot more to talk about here still on the Big Tuesday Show, back after these words.
Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hi, it's Randy Rhodes, and here's what you missed. I've always said the primary is a series of contests in which we all get to fall in love, or in this case, wage a protest vote. In the primary, you fall in love, in the general, you fall in line. I've always believed that. And so for Michiganders who want to wage a protest vote against Joe Biden, I don't know why Joe Biden. I mean, Donald Trump is the Muslim ban guy, but okay. I get that they want to send a message to the current president of the United States that they would like to see the president of the United States call for a total ceasefire. Not that it would actually work. I don't know if they think it would, but the idea that there is a protest vote in Michigan and that they're trying to send a message, I'm all for it. Don't have time to listen to the live show? Want to hear more on your schedule? Go to randyrhodes.com and buy a stinking podcast.
Bob Seska plays more music.
Running like rats, same grin, looking hungry again. Bad luck, bad break, black cat.
Ooh, love this song. Love the rhythm track on this one, too. This is the Coal Men. C-O-A-L, Coal Men, like coal mining, like that kind of Coal Men. Song called Black Cat, the Everett album on which this song appears. It drops on March 29th.
Wow.
I glitched out last time on Thursday's show about a release date for an album, so I'm going to go way out on a limb. I think this single is already available. I think. I will... I'm a bad DJ.
What's the name of? You know what? We'll set out a mass search. What's the name of the single again?
The single is called the. It's called Black Cat.
Black Cat. All right, everybody, search for Black Cat. The Coal Man. Very good. Right. Hey, you know, I just want to say this about that song. I think that song has an attitude.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I love it.
And I like that attitude. Yeah. By the way, during the break, I went out and cooled off in front of my Vornado fan.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been tragic for us, too, because Kimberly survives on those fans. I mean, our entire place feels like there's a, like an actual tornado inside. It's just constantly fans running all the time.
Yeah, you can hit those things with hammers and they're fine.
That's right. And plus, you can see your breath in here.
Yeah. Well, you guys keep it chilly. Yeah. I use it for the hum, for the sleep noise. And I know a lot of people agree with me on this, but I have an elaborate sleep noise system now.
Same. Yeah, I can't sleep without it. Even when Kimberly was away, I kept the fans running in the bedroom as I was sleeping. Yeah.
Kept the home fans running. Yes.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it's not just about coolness. It's about that noise. That's right. Which is helpful. Mm. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so the fallout from the Alabama Supreme Court decision that, essentially banning IVF treatment in that state. Continues to blow back in the faces of all Republicans. I think even now Donald Trump is supporting IVF.
Yes. Oh, yes. Very much so.
And Republicans are like backpedaling fast to try to support IVF. And the crazy thing about this is now what they're doing, what Republicans are saying is IVF is fine, which means they're saying that destroying embryos, which they consider to be human beings, which they consider to be babies, is fine with them. They're okay with that kind of destruction of embryos. But when it's women making personal choices on pregnancies, no fucking way. You can't do that.
No, most Republicans knew right away. I mean, the moment this Supreme Court ruling came down from the Alabama State Supreme Court, the moment that ruling came down, most Republicans went, oh, my God. Oh, no, that's not what we meant. Let me tell you what the effect of this has been. The reason that this got before the Alabama Supreme Court in the first place is because conservatives have been pushing for the concept of, and these are the key words here, Bob, fetal personhood.
Exactly.
Their goal has been fetal personhood. And so it only followed in their minds that frozen embryos, which, by the way, are not fetuses, qualified for fetal personhood.
Yeah.
And that's when, as Bob said so accurately a moment ago, they painted themselves into a corner. Immediately, this will tickle you, I think, Bob. Republican lawmakers in Florida had put forth a fetal personhood bill.
Yeah.
And when the Alabama State Supreme Court made this ruling and everybody realized it was a major fuck up, Florida Republicans immediately withdrew their fetal personhood bill. This Alabama State Supreme Court ruling is in many ways a win for us. It will get fixed. Republicans in Alabama will fix it, if nothing else, to try to save their own skins. But again, the damage has already been done.
Yeah.
Republicans have stepped in it this time while wearing their gold Trump sneakers. And by the way, I just wanted to briefly apologize for my naivete last week. I kept saying, I can't imagine why he was selling sneakers. Well, it became obvious a couple of days later when he said black people like him because he has a mugshot. And, and then it began, now I see what he thought he was doing with
stupid
the sneakers.
Stupid idiot, yeah.
A cynicism, cynical racism, if ever it existed. But anyway, I digress.
Right.
It's been about fetal personhood, and so now, as a result of this, it's actually become a win for progressives, because now conservatives are going, maybe this fetal personhood, maybe we've taken this too far. We've got to backpedal now.
Well, Republicans are making, for example, 12-year-old girls carry their rapist's baby to term. Right. But if you're someone who's better off, if you're a grown up who can afford IVF treatment, you can go in and you can be responsible for God knows how many embryos being destroyed in the process of using IVF treatments. So this is the massive hypocrisy. And yes, I get it. Once again, we're in that post-hypocrisy era where it doesn't matter. Only owning the libs is all that matters.
Yeah.
But still, this is the corner they've painted themselves into. So on one hand, they're trying to pander to the evangelical Christians who basically control the money flowing into the current Republican Party, such that it is. I mean, they're basically bankrupt. But the suffice to say, they need that evangelical support. So they pass things like the Supreme Court ruling in Alabama about IVF and fetal personhood. And then at the same time, it pisses off everyone else. So now they got to go, well, no, we're really in favor of IVF, which means we're really in favor of destroying embryos. We're okay with that. But, oh, shit, wait a second. you know, that's the conundrum that they're in. And I've got the popcorn out. I'm watching them try to wiggle out of this.
Rightly so. Much fun. Well, whether you realize it or not, you've turned over an interesting rock here because you mentioned their desire to own the libs and how it ultimately painted them into a corner.
Yeah.
That seems to me to be a medical condition we can label owning the libs blindness. Okay? They have accused us of Trump derangement syndrome. Uh-huh. They clearly have owning the libs blindness. They have been so blinded in their delight, in their sexual gratification of owning the libs. They're so delighted in that that it's made them blind to what they're doing and how else. It's only when you're not paying attention that you paint yourselves into a corner.
Yeah.
And clearly Republicans were not paying attention when they painted themselves into this one. Use this against them. Abortion is still our number one issue to get Democrats and others to the polls this November.
I assure you, though, if Donald Trump wins in November, they will backpedal on their support for IVF, with their Johnny-come-lately support for IVF, I should say. This will be back on the table if Donald Trump wins in November, because then that will be
fetal personhood certainly will be.
Some
form of, you know.
Well, because that's exactly what we're talking about, fetal personhood. That's the context.
Even if their policy is hypocritical, they will have policies that support both sides of that hypocrisy.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So here's a quote that you need to guess who said this quote.
Okay.
And I'll set you up with a clue. The answer is ironic. So here we go. Here's the quote. I fully support fertility treatments, and I think they deserve the protection of the law. They gave us great comfort in those long and challenging years that we struggled with infertility in our marriage. I'll never forget the day that I called home, driving off to a work appointment, and Karen answered the phone and said, "Happy Father's Day," and our son would come along, then a daughter, then another daughter, all within 3 years. We were busy but joyful. Who said this?
Okay, I don't know his first name, but I'm going to say the patriarch of the Duggar family.
That'd be incorrect. Incorrect.
But funny.
One more.
X gets the square.
Okay. Maybe. I mean, it could have been. They may have said that, but it was actually Mike Pence who said it.
Wow.
So nice try, but it was Mike Pence who and his wife engaged in IVF treatments. God only knows how many embryos were destroyed by Mike Pence and his wife, Karen, who don't mind killing babies in pursuit of having one of their own. So I guess
I could make all sorts of tasteless jokes here, which I will avoid. Yeah.
Well, here's the dark side of all of this. And we've all been talking about, like, where do they go next? It was IVF, obviously the Dobbs decision, and then IVF, and they're going to go after contraception and no-fault divorce. These are all things that are covered in Project 2025, in fact. But the other thing that I think we should watch for that is even maybe even more nefarious than some of the things I just listed, I'm wagering that a Republican somewhere, probably in a state legislature, probably in a deep red state, is going to introduce a bill that legalizes spousal abuse. I firmly believe that this will be on the table. Maybe not tomorrow, maybe not a month from now, maybe not a year from now. But at some point on this current trajectory, as Republicans attempt to box in women, I think this is going to be a thing that we end up talking about on this show.
Maybe decriminalizing it, maybe removing the enforcement of it.
That could be.
I don't know that it'll be a full on, yes, you can abuse your, you know, but because of the mindset that we're dealing with here, I can certainly see it going in that direction.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that is a genuine concern. But for our immediate purposes in 2024, the issue, the hottest issue is abortion. Mm-hmm. The second hottest issue is the fate of this democracy.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah.
You know, the idea of putting military in the streets against the American citizens, of mass deportation camps.
Yep.
That's your second tier, oddly, your second tier choice. But to get voters to the polls, the top one remains a woman's right to make her own health care decisions. And the Republicans, with doing what they've done here with IVF, let me put it this way. They have us right where we want them.
Yeah, I don't think there's a limit on their extremism. I think they're going to keep going. I think they're going to keep pushing forward, making women second-class citizens. And they've done so on many different fronts that maybe 10 years ago we didn't even conceive of. And yet here we are. One last thing I wanted to mention here real quick, too. The call was coming from inside the building. Uh-huh. Dean Phillips and this magician from New Orleans named Paul Carpenter, were responsible for that Joe Biden AI robocall, in which Joe Biden, in an AI representation of Joe Biden, said that you can only vote once a year, so don't waste your vote in the New Hampshire primary. Make sure to vote in November instead, trying to get people to stay home in New Hampshire. We should have known at the time that, it sounds like something Dean Phillips would do.
It sickened me to know that a Democratic operative had done such a thing.
Yeah.
Sickened.
Yeah. And I wonder, I begin to scratch my head and look in the direction of Steve Schmidt, who no longer works for Dean Phillips. He lasted a couple of weeks, but I wonder to what extent Steve Schmidt was involved in the robocall idea.
Who knows?
Because apparently this guy, I think, just did it. It made the AI voice, and the Dean Phillips campaign paid him $150 to have permission to use the robocall AI. That's an actual robocall. Yeah. So who knows?
Chin up. We're winning. Their loss is our gain. Like I said, when it comes to Republicans, they have us right where we want them.
Yeah. We just have to be careful getting led down dark alleys by some of these guys like Dean Phillips and Marianne Williamson and RFK Jr. and their cynical cash grab.
Avoid the blind alley.
Yes, indeed. Yes. He's 81 and he knows things.
I love it.
I should make a t-shirt. I really should. Okay, Shadow Dockets coming up next. Patreon.com/Bob Seska Show. Sign up for $5 a month and you can keep listening to us talking. All right? And you can only hear it on the Patreon page. So go there right now, sign up, and we will see you over there. Take care, folks. Have a great day. Bye-bye.